Hello, Toronto. I'm Stevie San from the Heartistic Podcast. Before you start the show, I'd like to give you a little disclaimer of my own. The conversations in this podcast are hard-driven and passionate. Some opinions, language, and suggestions may not be tolerated by some listeners. Thanks for listening, and viewer's discretion is advised.
At heart's weight, and mind's eye, we invent the escape to our fantasies. Visions, dreams, and desires, we create our realities, burning through your soul, your heartbeat, and passion. We are Heartistic.
I am your host, Stevie Sound, and today I'm going to do a show that I feel is very important to everyone's life, whether you are an artist or not. I'm here to spread fact and inspiration, not opinions and bigotry. Creativity is embedded into everything in our lives, and when you do something out of passion, that is you, your person being creative. I believe in advocacy. I'm an advocate for many different causes in our city. I take my time to pay attention and to contribute to many of the issues that we have in our world today. Why? Because it will better my life and the people around me. And if the people around me are satisfied and happy, then we haven't any issues. Advocacy is an art. It's a passion. And in that sense, if you're truthful about it, your creativity will find a way to make your purpose or cause heard and inspire a slew of other like-minded individuals that can act as a forcing asset to your beliefs or causes. This episode will be showcasing my longtime friend, Romaine Baker, that ironically has a lot to do with advocacy down here in Toronto. He is a part of the organization named Black Urbanism Toronto that are striving to change policy in Toronto and assisting towards having policy to involve Black people and Black communities' opinions incorporated further and actions contributed into our politics and national decisions. Would everyone please welcome to the show, Romaine Baker.
Thank you for having me.
No problem, man. Thank you for coming today. I'm very grateful, and I'm thankful for having you here today, man, like I just said. Sorry. I'm finally glad to have this conversation with you where hundreds of people can potentially listen and learn rather than on our cell phones like we have been for like the past 10 years. So first, let's start off with introducing yourself. Let everyone listening know a little bit about yourself, Romaine, and what you do here in Toronto.
Sure. My name is Romaine Baker. I am a husband, I'm a dad, I'm a proud Jamaican Canadian. I've been in Toronto for about 7 years. I grew up in Brampton. Stephen, you know that?
Yeah.
yeah, I've been in Toronto. I am a policy advisor by day and an advocate for my neighborhood, my community. Mm-hmm. Jamaica by night. So that's been keeping me busy for the last couple of years.
Okay, so you said that you were a policy advisor. For the people that might not know what that is, let us know what that is. And you also said that you were an advocate for your community of Little Jamaica. Let us know first what policy advisory is and then where exactly Little Jamaica is.
Definitely. So, policy is the course of action that governments take. And so as a policy advisor, you try to find solutions to problems, develop recommendations, and you provide those to the politicians. You provide your best advice, and then they can choose to accept it or reject it. But we're here to, represent the interests of the people of Ontario, and we provide recommendations to the people that we elect. In regards to Little Jamaica, it's a community that has been, established and existing since like the late 60s, early 70s, when, Canada's immigration policies changed and, primarily Jamaican immigrants started coming here in huge numbers, whereas, the policies kind of banned us from immigrating here before. Mm-hmm. So, Jamaicans were coming here looking for a better life, looking for work. And so as they came, they settled along Eglinton West, which, had a pre-existing, Black Canadian population. So the Black history in that area is pretty rich. Black people were settling in that area. And, naturally, that means, community starts to form. People started opening up businesses, including, restaurants and grocery stores, barbershops and salons, record studios, you know, the reggae history of the area is immense. You know, a lot of Jamaican artists were actually coming up at the same time to Toronto. And so they started setting up recording studios and recording reggae music here in Toronto.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it's amazing. There's a lot of music from that era that, you know, people listen to and they don't even realize that it was actually recorded here in Toronto. Wow. So Toronto has a huge reggae history that, you know, I think as a city you can do a much better job of appreciating and bringing to the forefront so people can, you know, learn about that. But, you know, this neighborhood has, like all neighborhoods do, they go through, you know, changes. So you're talking about from the early 70s until now, you know, there have been different factors that have been influencing the development of the neighborhood, you know, where people settle. And so at this point, you know, the once vibrant little Jamaican neighborhood, and, you know, to be clear, obviously all the people that have settled here are not Jamaican. They come from all over the Caribbean. They come from Latin America, Philippines as well. But, you know, that Jamaican culture is very strongly represented here, hence the name. But you know, we're at a point right now where, you know, the LRT is, you know, a huge infrastructure project that is being developed, and that has caused a massive catastrophe for the area, where, you know, businesses aren't even able to operate because of all the construction and the blockade that are put up in front of their stores, or people don't even know if their stores are open. And that's been going on for over 10 years. So, you know, these businesses have been suffering, and so they're closing down one by one. And, you know, now we have COVID where, you know, a lot of the businesses can't even open their doors. So essentially Little Jamaica is disappearing. Mm-hmm. And it's a huge loss to the city of Toronto. It's a huge loss to, you know, Black people in the city. You know, there are neighborhoods where, you know, we really aren't welcomed in the, you know, mainstream restaurant and club scene. There is definitely racism and bias and against our people there. And so Eglinton West really represented, like, you know, a safe space where we could, you know, be ourselves, where people who are born here could actually reconnect with their roots.
Yeah.
So it played a huge role for community. And, you know, a lot of, you know, people come from all across the GTA, man, to this area, to, you know, to reconnect. So what we're doing as an organization, Black Urbanism Teal, is we're advocating for, you know, changes in the way how, basically how the city develops, because something like an infrastructure project shouldn't displace and push out a neighborhood that has been longstanding and that's an integral part of the city. So we actually held some consultation sessions. We developed a report last summer called the Black Business Conversations Report, where we invited Black business owners to, you know, come and tell us about their experiences, tell us about, you know, their vision for the area. Because the city actually has a plan for the area, which didn't really capture the cultural element of it.
Okay.
Right? So it was completely overlooked, completely disregarded. And we said, no, you can't do that. You wouldn't go to Little Italy, create a whole plan for, you know, College Street and not consider Little Italy in that plan. And that's exactly what happened in Little Jamaica. So we were pushing against that. And just this past September, because those city council passed a couple motions about renaming and rebranding Eglinton West as Little Jamaica. They had some midterm, short-term, and long-term, you know, policies and recommendations for, you know, how to ensure that the businesses aren't displaced and how to really strengthen them so that they can continue to grow and thrive. So I'm really proud of that work because it's definitely needed.
Awesome. Yeah. So that's basically, you know, where you live and what the group that you're part of, Black Urbanism Toronto, has done thus far. So for
Little Jamaica. I know that I lived there for about 3 years, and I just loved how safe I felt and how involved I felt by everybody. There was always a hello when you'd walk by. There was always a nice gesture. So I'm really glad that they're finally getting their notoriety, so to say. I'd like to know some of the values and experiences of growing up in Jamaica and how they inspired you to go along and educate yourself within policy, ultimately becoming a policy advisor and contributing towards your life and the community in Toronto.
Oh, that's a great question, man.
Thank you.
Jamaica is a very special place. It produces leaders, I think, naturally. And I think, you know, obviously the path that a leader will take, I think we're all leaders.
Yeah.
But I think in terms of, you know, having a vision and implementing it and inspiring other people to join and, you know, put their efforts together to work toward a common goal, I think Jamaica naturally does that. If you know anything about Jamaican history, we have a long history of, you know, freedom fighters, people who were not, you know, content with the status quo, and they decided to do something about it. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I learned about those stories from family, from school, and they really inspired me. And they really identified with those, you know, with that image and that narrative. You know, having a sense of accountability to self, to family, to country, having a sense of duty. And, you know, that's really how I operate. A strong sense of accountability to the people around me. And so growing up with that, I've always been very, you know, also growing up in Jamaica, you know, politics is a real thing. As a kid, the conversations you have with your family is around, you know, policies that, you know, government is putting in place that impact you, your day to day. As a kid, you're talking about inflation, you know, you're talking about scarcity of food and, you know, all these different things, and you're very much aware. So I was always aware of, you know, the environment around me, the political side, political unrest was a thing as well. So, you know, coming here to Canada, I had those values kind of instilled, and, you know, that desire to kind of, you know, be the change that I wanted to see in the world, not being content with the status quo and, you know, not just complaining about it, but, you know, doing something about it. And that kind of, you know, trickled down into this part of my life where I moved into the neighborhood for the same reason of, you know, being able to connect with, you know, my roots, a place that's very relatable to me, you know, just walking out on the street and being able to buy like some traditional Jamaican bread that mm-hmm. people literally line up for, going to a patty shop, going to a barber shop. Like, in Black culture, hair is a very, it's a very unique experience mm-hmm. for Black people. And, you know, these barbershops and salons, they actually serve as like community spaces. Like, so much is going on in there that you can't really find that kind of community anywhere else.
No.
And so, I came here, and the very thing that I valued was actually disappearing before my eyes. So, in my mind, obviously, I'm not going to just twiddle my thumbs and watch it go. I had to do something about it. And so that's what, you know, inspired me to, you know, reach out to, you know, some very close friends of mine, like Dean Gardner, and I went to school with him as well, Brock, and then another guy named Theo, and, you know, just really, you know, sharing the vision and them, you know, adding to it. And, you know, we got to this point now where we have this organization that's doing really important work.
That's amazing. That's so inspiring, man. I'm so glad to hear a story like that. That's great. I hope to meet Theo and what was the other guy's name? What? Sorry?
Dave.
It would be, that'd be great. Okay. So back to your group, Black Urbanism Toronto, what's the mandate and what are the other accolades that you guys have accomplished?
So for now, like Little Jamaica is our first project. Okay. It's still ongoing. There's a lot of work that needs to happen here. But, you know, we do, we are positioned to grow and to be able to support other communities in the city and then throughout the GTA. Our mandate is really to engage Black communities to, you know, play an active role in re-envisioning their neighborhoods, mm-hmm. To support our cultural, our economic and social, you know, advancement. The thing is that planning, like urban planners, it's a very, you know, Eurocentric and white discipline. You can go to any planning firm, look at any planners in the city, whatever level of government, like they're very predominantly white. And so when you have white people that are operating within a system of systemic racism, mm-hmm. it's like Eurocentricism, there's like complete blinders on.
Absolutely.
As it relates to, you know, people's experience on the ground. So, you know, for example, like whenever they're having urban planning, like consultation sessions, you know, they might be holding a consultation session at a time of day in a working class neighborhood when people are at work, and they call it consultation. So automatically you have like a huge segment of society that's not going to be able to participate because of the decision to hold a session in a particular location at a particular time of day. You know, people that are speaking, like planning again is a very academic discipline, and so you go into an environment, into an area, into a neighborhood, and you're using all this jargon and language that, you know, the average person won't be able to understand. Mm-hmm. So, like, you know, there are barriers there. So traditionally, you know, Black people have had very little participation in these processes of shaping and building neighborhoods. And these neighborhoods, they really, you know, planning really impacts the day-to-day. It talks, you know, impacts where parks go, whether or not there are any parks and recreational centers and facilities. It looks at, you know, the type of housing that's in an area. Does it support low-income housing or not? Does it support, you know, the building of community? Just because, just the way how the neighborhood is built, you know, you could have, it could really prevent community from forming. Is it accessible by transit, public transit? You know, like low income people might rely more on public transit than having, you know, their own vehicles to just hop in and drive around. And then the neighborhood might not be, you know, might not lend itself to that. So planning is huge, man. It really impacts communities in so many different ways that we don't even realize because we don't, you know, we're not planners and we don't engage in those conversations. And so what we want to do is to, you know, break down that barrier and create opportunities for Black people to really have a seat at the table of deciding how their neighborhoods develop, so that, you know, they can really benefit from it. It's a huge, I guess, gap and void where our voices aren't really reflected, and we want to definitely break that down because if we are residents in an area, if we live in an area, we should have just as much access to decision makers, and you know, our opinions need to be considered.
Absolutely, I definitely agree with that. So in that sense, I guess you did answer some future endeavors for Black Urbanism Toronto, but what would be the ultimate goal for Black Urbanism Toronto? I guess there really wouldn't be one, right? It's just always to make sure that everyone's informed.
Like, our vision is definitely for, it depends on for the organization or for the communities. For the communities, it will be, you know, for, you know, people of African descent that are Black living in Toronto, the GTA, to, you know, be well informed about how planning impacts them. and, you know, being able to take an active stance to, you know, make changes in the neighborhood, in their neighborhoods and surroundings, to respond to, I guess, local issues, right? An issue could be, you know, lack of employment opportunities, lack of community spaces, lack of recreational spaces, lack of, you know, access to transit, lack of access to, or, you know, not just looking at it from a lack perspective, but also, you know, things that just need to be improved, like, you know, absolutely, just building on successes and, you know, just ensuring that, you know, Black people can actively participate and play a leadership role in their communities. Because I can tell you right now that the decisions that are being made don't have the interests of Black people at heart. And so as Toronto continues to develop, it's becoming a more expensive city to live in. A lot of things are becoming a bit more, you know, scarce. And so ultimately, you know, people are going to be displaced. And we see that where people having to make decisions between, you know, rent and buying food to feed their families. So, you know, that's an issue of affordable housing. And so that's an issue that Black people can play a more active role in, of advocating for themselves, right? So that's just an example.
So how do we find out more? Do you guys have a website, or are there ways to donate to you guys, or are there rallies that we can stay informed? How can we be informed? You know, where are the links? What are the links?
Definitely. So we have a website that is currently under construction. We, you know, brought it down, and, you know, we're rebranding and refreshing it. But we are on Instagram.
Okay.
I'll let you know the...
Well, yeah, I'll definitely have a link.
Well, yeah, we're on Instagram, we're on Twitter, we're on Facebook. We actually partner with a local youth organization to launch a GoFundMe campaign. And so this came about because of COVID and, you know, the lockdowns and it impacting businesses. So the GoFundMe campaign is for, you know, Black businesses to help them, you know, stay open, to, you know, take their businesses to that next step of, you know, becoming more sustainable. So whether it be, like, you know, moving a lot, some of their operations online, you know, marketing, you know, and the fund has been doing well. We've been able to support businesses, and we're continuing to take applications. It's like we disperse the money as a grant. So that's a great opportunity and a great way for, you know, your listeners to be able to support the work that's happening in the Little Jamaica area.
Perfect. Well, I'll definitely have links to all the stuff you just said under your episode description at www.heartisticpodcast.budsprout.com, which will be www.heartisticpodcast.com very soon, probably by tomorrow. So you can also tell everyone that you can just check all your links there, and we'll have those posted. So I feel like we've done pretty good with, you know, finding out what policy is and basically finding out what Black Urbanism Toronto is. Is there anything you want to touch up on or relate to before I ask any more questions about, any more personal questions?
I think it's just the, you know, I would just invite everybody to look into Little Jamaica, and just gain an appreciation for what it is. You know, Black people have been in this country since before Confederation, you know, since the days of New France. You know, Black people have been here. But the thing is that, you know, the Black experience in Canada, obviously, you know, we went through that era of slavery that came later. But when Black people first came here, they were here as explorers and interpreters, helping the French to understand the indigenous languages, mm-hmm. right? Which is interesting, because how the hell would they be able to interpret the language that we didn't have contact with before? So that kind of makes you, you know, ask some questions. But, you know, Black communities have always been very vulnerable to displacement. Here in Ontario, there are towns that were founded by Black people that came up here, you know, to the Underground Railroad. They came up here and they settled, but because of hatred and racism and opposition, they were completely removed from those communities that they built and established. There are literally graves and headstones that are knocked down and, you know, plowed over in towns here in Ontario, like black cemeteries all across southern Ontario that have been paved over. So the racism in Canada is about erasure. It's about displacement. It's about making people feel like they don't have a home. They don't belong. And that's a pattern you see from BC all the way to Nova Scotia, and it's happening here in Little Jamaica. And so, you know, this isn't something that is new. This is something that is very Canadian, right?
Absolutely.
And so we need to take a step back and say, like, look, it's happening right now. Are we really going to sit back and allow this pattern to continue? Or are we going to have a reckoning as a country, as a society, and say, look, it's enough is enough. This cannot continue. But yeah, so that's what I wanted to share.
Absolutely, and I agree with that. There are so many stories back from Indigenous to everything, and a lot of it stems in Canada. One of my favorites is Weibo Ludwig. He was basically dubbed an eco-terrorist, but he was actually an eco-activist now after a documentary came out. You should go check out the Weibo Ludwig story. It's called Weibo's War, and it just depicts exactly what you're talking about. It's crazy. But that's great. I'm glad that we got you on here to explain this, because I agree, it's not explained enough. And as much as it is explained, I just feel like everyone just puts it one in ear and out the other. So you guys can all go check out the links and stay informed with Romain and what he does for our city, because it's a very big piece, and you should go stay informed. Sorry about that. So let's continue on. We're going to do a little bit more fun things now. I usually have two games that I play. Now you plugged as much as you can. You plugged who you were working with and your company and where we can find all the information. So that's great. One of the games is a plug game, where I just get every guest to basically plug themselves or plug people that they think should be acknowledged. So we'll get to the second game. Do you have your phone handy on you?
I do.
Awesome. Okay, perfect. So
looking by plug.
So yeah, no, it's not going to be nothing crazy. Don't worry. It's called the playlist game. And what I typically do is I get the guests to shuffle their musical library in their phone three times, and basically tell me the song and tell me a little bit about the song and what it means to you. And, you know, this allows us to kind of tell us musically who you are. And that's a great thing, because music has a lot of power and it can really shine a light to other people on who you are, and can really shine a light on yourself. So let's start that up. Can you get to your music library right now, quick?
All right. Yep, I'm here.
Okay. And if you can, try and... let's see if we can hear it. Hopefully we can hear it. I don't know if we can, but if we can't, just tell me the name of the song and who it's by, what it, you know, what the song's a little bit about and what it means to you. There we go. Okay, so what's that song and who's it by? Perseverance. By who?
His name is Count Lasher.
Masher.
Count? Like the Count of Monte Cristo.
Okay.
So Count Lasher, Lesher.
Okay. So what genre would this fall under?
So this would fall under a genre called mental. So mental is the grandfather of reggae. It's this was the first recorded Jamaican music. So I come like, you know, our folk traditional type stuff. This song, it's a part of a record that had a variety of, you know, different artists and whatnot. And so this was just one of the songs on there. But this song is called Perseverance. And the lyric says, big, big, water boy. So the thing about mental music is that it uses a lot of imagery and metaphors. And so this song is actually talking about sex. And so it's telling the water boy to keep digging so until he finds the water.
Okay, I get that metaphorically. That's amazing. That's cool. That's so cool. Okay, let's get to the next one. Let's shuffle again.
All right.
Let's try and get it a little bit into the phone more if you can.
Can you hear it?
That's better. That sounds like dance hall. Cool. That sounds like dance hall, yeah. What's that?
No, that's not dance hall, man. I'm sure you're getting all of the weird Romanian songs today.
Yeah.
The song is called Caracolito. Caracol, in Spanish, it means snail, a little snail. This is actually a Garifuna song. The Garifuna, they are a people that they were brought to the Caribbean during the slavery era, and the overpowered their European captors, and they actually went and settled with the indigenous people on that island, St. Vincent. They were eventually banished from the island by England, and they were brought to Central America, to Honduras, and they now live on the east coast of Central America in Belize, Honduras, Nicaragua. And so I lived in Belize for 2 years. I was serving a mission there, and the town that I was in was a Garifuna town.
Oh, cool.
So I was among, you know, the Garifuna people, beautiful people, man, beautiful language. It's actually like the indigenous Carib language that they speak, but they bring the African cultural element. So this song was just one of their songs.
Wow, I guess it's over the phone. It sounded like dancehall to me, but I was totally wrong. That's cool. I'm gonna look that up. Garifuna, you say?
Yeah, man.
Garifuna.
Wicked music.
From Honduras. Okay, cool. Awesome. Let's get to the third one.
Hey, let's see what this song is gonna.
There we go. Okay, so what's that one?
This song is called Anybody by Burna Boy. Afrobeats is like really big right now.
Afrobeats.
Afrobeats, yeah, it's like the genre of music coming out of mostly Nigeria. I have no idea what this guy's saying. But you know, it has a good vibe. I like listen to this stuff when I'm trying to focus, when I'm working or whatever. Not. Mm-hmm. It helps that I can't sing along because I don't know the words, so I just listen to it. I just feel the vibe and get my brain in the zone.
That's cool. It's so cool because I literally do this game to get like a different reaction or a different sense of who people are, and like that is literally so cool. This game is going to be so cool because now we're going to get so much different like cultures and ethnicities. It's going to be, that was so much fun. You don't even understand. I that was, oh goodness. So one last question.
Top 42 as well. So I don't know why none of those songs came up.
Well, that's exactly what it is, right? I listen, man, music's alive. That's what it is. Those songs came out for a reason. They literally showed, like, you told us the story about how you lived in Belize for 2 years. You know what I mean? There you go. Like,
that's what music does for you. That's what music does. So I'm going to ask you one last question, which is actually kind of incorporated into this. I know that you played guitar because we've played together and we've talked about it. How long have you been doing that for, and what's your motive behind that musical passion? How do you feel when you do it, and what does it mean to you? Why do you pick up that guitar?
Good question, man. Yeah, guitar. I started playing in about grade 11. I was always drawn to the guitar until I bought one to myself.
That's a good feeling when you buy your own guitar, let me tell you.
Yeah, man, this thing is so beat up. It has scratches, dents, the works, but it's mine.
Exactly.
Yeah, I've always been drawn to music. Especially the drums. I can't explain it, man, but I can literally like feel it. And a lot of what I do is I play by ear. I read music and don't really look up tabs that much. But yeah, music was always kind of like an outlet for me. Mm-hmm. A lot of the songs that I play are songs that I make up. And I would record so I don't forget it, because I forget them like there's no tomorrow.
That's it.
It was really like, you know, and to be honest with you, I'm always, I guess, the most creative, where I make up the most songs when I'm supposed to be doing something else. So, for example, you know, when it's exam time, that's when I'm like making up songs. It's like, it's nobody's business. It's my way of procrastinating.
Well, you probably teach yourself too. You probably, you know, occupy your brain with something else to be like, all right, I got to get back to this now. Like, this has to be done now. You know what I mean? And sometimes if you don't do that, you go crazy. So I totally understand that. All right, Romain, well, that is about all the time that we have for today, I believe. This was a very important episode to me, and I'm ever so grateful to have you inform and educate Toronto with and for me. So again, we're going to close off this show. Like I told you, in the pre-screening. So I'm going to say, good gentleman, who art thou?
Thou art Romain Baker.
And thou art?
Thou art artistic.
Awesome. Yes. Everybody, please check out the Black Urbanism Toronto website when I do post it on Romain's episode description on our website. And I will see you again. Stay artistic, Toronto. Thank you.